hiring a project manager at the beginning to really keep people honest, because they would have gone and been local. This was all from remote. So this is all in the Midwest. I live in California full-time. I was internationally at the time of this going on. Wow. So managing all of this while remote is difficult.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I've got Michael Albaum here with me. He's the head of real estate coaching and program manager for Rooftop Academy. He's done various types of deals, from single family, long-term leases, triple net properties with a chain of national tenants. You know, after years investing, he found his niche with long distance value add multifamily investing. I'm pumped to talk to him about that. He left his 9-to-5 in 2019, was traveling the world with his wife until COVID brought him back here stateside, where they traveled around the US in their converted van. Having seen the benefits of real estate investing, what it can provide, he's extremely passionate about helping others achieve their financial goals. And he's got a terrific podcast that I know we're going to talk about too. So I'm excited to have him here. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing great, Neil. Thanks so much. Really excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. I'm pumped you're here. You've got a breadth of experience, and it's fun to talk about, touch on a whole number of things. But yeah. Maybe before we do that, what was your first entry point? How did you in the world even get started in real estate?
Yeah. So I think, like so many of your listeners, probably got started by reading the Bible, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
That's right.
So I was working a 9-to-5 corporate gig as a professional fire protection engineer. Great job out of school. Said, okay, I've made it. Like, this is it. I'm going to retire with this company. They had pensions, like all the good stuff. Yeah. And then I was like, oh man, this isn't getting me going fast enough where I want to go.
Right.
And so I read the book and I was like, oh, okay, I understand numbers. And just from a like conceptual standpoint, real estate investing made sense. So I spent like 2 years getting self-educated, reading all the books I could, piecing together everything I could find on websites. Like BiggerPockets wasn't really around and Roofstock wasn't around quite yet. So pieces together to myself, had my dad definitely handhold a little bit because he had a little bit of experience in real estate.
Sure.
Ended up buying a house in a market where we knew a property manager, knew an agent, and was just kind of off to the races. And when that first rent check showed up, yeah, I was like, bing, I'm a genius. I figured out real estate investing. I'm the first one ever to do this successfully. And I, like, of course, this could be further from the truth, but I was right. Like, okay, if I can do this once a year for 10 years, I'll have 10 properties.
Correct.
And that will be good as an arbitrary number. And really, it was just off to the races from there. So I was doing that, buying consistently one property a year. But what I started to do was I was traveling a lot for work. And so definitely had a cheat code life hack. Yep. And I was getting paid and having my trips paid for.
Yes.
Traveling. And I would just double dip and look at the real estate markets wherever I happened to be, so outside good. Of California.
Yep.
And it was way cheaper. So I was like, oh, like, I can do this. I'm just picking up the phone and calling my Southern California property manager from California. I'll just happen to call my Alaska property manager from California.
Right.
And it's the same. So that's when I really had my eyes opened to like doing this thing out of state.
Yeah.
And have just not stopped since. I've been running as hard as I can at that. I lived well below my means for about 10 years while I was working in the corporate world, was renting, not buying for my primary residence, had roommates. I got married, continued to have roommates. My wife wasn't thrilled about that, but we said, hey, it's working towards something bigger.
Yeah.
And I got connected with Roofstock a couple of years ago, helped them develop a coaching program and an educational program, and have been doing that all remote since leaving the corporate world in 2019.
Tell me, if you didn't have that corporate job that catapulted you to various sections of the country, would you have ever gone and bought something someplace else?
I like to think so. Yeah. I think we all like to think that, yeah, we would have all gotten there eventually, but yeah. I don't know. I think having the fundamentals of like real estate investing, not in my backyard. My first deal was like 2.5 hours away.
Yeah.
So that kind of gave me the eye openings to like, oh, I could do this. But for whatever reason, I had kind of horse blinders on, and outside state bounds wasn't quite on my radar yet. So I don't know. I don't know. I like to think so.
Yeah. Knowing what you know now, the thought of maybe not doing it, but definitely doing it. I mean, is it just a limiting belief that people possess?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think so many people get stuck in this belief of, I have to be able to see it, touch it, smell it, taste it to be able to invest in it or manage it or insert verb here. And the reality is you don't. Like, there are people doing this successfully every single day of the week that live all over the world that are investing all over the place. And so once you can get over that mental hurdle of, okay, I don't physically need to see it, touch it, taste it, smell it, whatever, like literal world, the proverbial world becomes your oyster.
Yeah. Sometimes it's been my experience that when you have to be so hands-on in some cases, it's actually a negative, not a positive.
I see it that way. And people ask me all the time, like, okay, how do you do that? Like, why would you do that? And I just say it forces you to be really good at task delegation and time management, which unless you want to be doing those things, unless you want to manage the property and manage the tenant, which more power to you, that's just not me. I had to get good at that stuff. Otherwise the scalability falls apart.
Right.
So I think it's, you're building a muscle.
Yep. No, I'm totally right. So it sounds like you built a portfolio. You didn't fix and flip. You didn't wholesale. You built a single family rental portfolio to begin with.
Yeah. So it started single family very intentionally because I didn't know about duplexes, tris, quads.
Right.
Then got exposed to that and realized, oh, well, not only is the cash flow better outside California, but there's more units. Like, this is way better than single family.
Right.
And then jumped into commercial multifamily. So 5 units plus.
Yep.
And really kind of where I found my niche is this 5 to 10 units, like too big for your typical mom and pop, too small for your traditional institution. And so I'm looking around, I'm like, there's nobody else here who wants to buy these things when I was buying them. Yeah. So it just totally worked. It totally worked.
Yeah. No, that's neat. And so that has subsequently morphed into more value add projects, has it not?
Yes. And so I kind of fell into value add without really knowing what that was or recognizing it at the time, but just seeing like, oh, this is under rent. I'm buying it based on today's price, but I could simply raise the rent tomorrow, $100 a month, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
And cash flow way better. So that was kind of my first intro from like a management perspective of value add. Then it really got into the very heavy value add from a rehab perspective. And that is a whole nother story entirely.
Wow, you know, we're going to go there in a minute.
I know.
All right. So the value add, the low hanging fruit is right to increase occupancy and or increase rent rates.
Yeah, or decrease expenses.
Yep.
If you know,
thank you.
Landlords paying for utilities, that's a super easy one to put back on the tenants oftentimes.
Yep. Yeah. And so you had success there and you decide, you know, let's go in and muck things up and go into construction.
Yes. Yeah, because it's the next logical progression.
You're like, oh, value add's good. Deep value add must be better.
Right. Yeah. Jacking down into the foundation to create a ceiling to floor height clearances. Oh my God. So yeah. Okay. You want to get into it, Neil?
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right, man. So
it sounds like we got a story for sure. At least one.
Yes. Big time. So yeah. I found my agent that I was working with, it was great, found me a ton of properties, found this deal. And it was this 20,000 square foot, 3-story mixed use building. So it had commercial on the lower floors, like 2 very established storefronts, 2 big commercial spaces on the first 2 floors, and then 3 apartments or 4 apartments on the upper levels. Well, he comes to me, my agent, and he says, look, this deal is awesome. It's fairly cheaply priced for what it is. And the city is literally giving away money to developers if they create residential spaces above commercial.
Yep.
So I looked into the program. It was a little bit convoluted, but basically I got my application approved and I was going to split the top units into a couple additional units. And so I was going to have basically 5 or 6 residential and keep everything else commercial. Mm-hmm. Started down that path, got architectural drawings, permits approved, work is going, da 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 da. And then my property manager tells me, oh, the middle tenant commercial is leaving. And I say, okay, what's the highest and best use of that space? He goes, I think you should convert it. And I'm like, oh, crap. Okay. So I reached out to the city. They said, yes, we'll give you money for that. Plans approved, permits pulled, work starts there. And then I'm trying to figure out, okay, well, what do I do with the bottom space? And you can probably guess how that conversation with the property manager goes. He goes, I think you should convert it. Same process. So I started this project 3 separate times, which already add additional cost and hurdles, right? So if you're going to do something, do it right the first time, which, full disclosure, I'm not a developer and I'm not a construction guy. So I was already a little bit doomed to begin with. But I'm like, problem.
You are now.
For better or for worse, independent of my choosing.
Yeah.
So, okay. So now we're underway with the full renovation of this building. And by the way, the city comes back and says, oh, you got to put an elevator in. And I was like, what? That was not planned. And they go, oh, by the way, you got to put a sprinkler system in. So like all these additional added costs started racking up that were totally outside the original scope, which I had already gone to the bank to get a construction loan for. Okay, fine. So we get all that sorted. We get the permits sorted. All the things that need to be put in place are sorted. I'm in Costa Rica, Neil, on a Saturday, and I get a phone call from my property manager, and nobody wants to see the phone ring from the property manager on the weekend.
No.
And he goes, hey, Michael, you're probably wondering why I'm calling you on a Saturday. And I said, yes, Josh, I am. He goes, well, there's been a fire in the building. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Is everybody okay? Yes, everyone's fine. Someone left something plugged in. Fire erupted in one of the commercial spaces. Lots of damage, mostly limited to there, but smoke damage throughout the entirety of the building. Okay, so claims insurance goes out. They're adjusting it. They're working through their stuff. I'm in Costa Rica still. I was there for a couple months. I get a phone call the following Sunday. Hey, Michael, you're probably wondering why I'm calling you on a Sunday. Yes, Josh, I am. You're not going to believe it. There's been another fire in the building on the roof this time. I was having the roof redone. I said, you've got to be kidding me. So needless to say, I got locked into this insurance battle for like 2.5 years because the insurance company was like just playing games. I went and hired a public adjuster,
right,
which if anyone's listening has dealt with an insurance claim or dealt with an insurance company that isn't playing ball, that's the first person you go call. Please, please, please take it from me. Go get them involved as soon as you can.
I'm only slight chuckling because we had tremendous hail damage that just went through ever the city last week. And we just had an email back and forth with the insurance company and my assistant. And I said, here's who to call, our public adjuster, who I know. I said, just forget the insurance company. Call this guy, have him go
bring
to
him
this
in.
Thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So that was a big lesson learned. Yeah. And so, and by the way, I should say, I come from the insurance industry. Like my father was an insurance broker for years. I grew up in the industry. I worked as a professional fire protection engineer for the largest commercial property insurer in the world. So I know how good things can go and how they're supposed to work.
Right.
And the fact that this didn't was just awful. So we had to go to court and then COVID shut down the courts. And it was just a mess. And the whole time my public adjuster says, don't touch anything in the building because it's an active insurance investigation. So for like 12 months, my contractor's got his hands tied, can't make progress in the building. I've got a mortgage and construction loan to pay. It was just an absolute nightmare.
Wow.
So coming out of the tail end of this in the coming weeks, actually, we're hopefully going to be getting our certificate of occupancy and going to be able to put this whole thing behind us. But there's just so many lessons learned, so many things I wished I would have done differently throughout this process. And one is just like, know your strengths and know your weaknesses. And like me raising my hand, full disclosure, I suck at project management and I suck at contractor management and I suck at like development. That is so not where my forte lies. And I kind of knew that in the back of my mind when I started this project, but I said, how hard can it be? What could possibly go wrong? I was like, I had a couple wins under my belt. So I was kind of cocky and confident. I'm like, oh yeah, I can do it. And just got absolutely clobbered. And so I had to go like get backup financing and sell some additional properties to pay for that. Like it's just been a total, total mess. Will it have all been worth it when it's done? Let's chat in a year. I mean, the rent roll on the thing is going to be astronomically high, which I'm really excited about, but I'm just going to be licking my wounds for quite some time.
Yeah. Wow. What else would you have, knowing what you now know, what else would you have done differently relative, you know, if you were to move forward to the project? Would you
say not do the project?
Yeah, I know. I knew that was going to be the answer. That's why I had to set it up that way. Would you have partnered with somebody? Would you have engaged other people on the front end differently? Would you have done something relative to insurance? Do you buy insurance differently now based on what you've learned?
Yeah, super good question. So I think first and foremost, I would have hired a project manager. And I think I fell victim to like one of my own rules and violated my own rules is just like go hire the professionals and pay for it. It's worth it. I think I was so gun shy at the sticker price of hiring a project manager halfway through the project that I was like, I'm already this far in, I can muddle through it. And so that's definitely first and foremost, hire a project manager, get the conversation rolling.
Draw me the difference. I understand what a project manager is very well on a single family side, but relative to where you're at in this process, draw the distinction between a project manager and a GC, a turnkey GC. I mean, just you turn it all over to them.
Yes. So I had a GC with this, but so a project manager is basically going to develop a Gantt chart. And for anyone who's not familiar with what a Gantt chart is, it's a chart, looks like kind of a bar chart of all of the things that have to happen in chronological order and what the time frame is to do those things. And so you can really see where you have overlap and where you have bottlenecks. So if you've got to get the framing done and it's going to take this long, and then you've got to install the windows and then there's some overlap. If the framing gets backed up, well, now your window install can't happen, and that's going to push back your painting. So it really helps get people organized. And so again, I think the scope of this project started so small and it just totally blew up in my face that at the time I'm like, I can do this. Yeah. And had it been the original scope, I probably would have been just fine. But so hiring a project manager at the beginning to really keep people honest, because they would have gone and been local. Yeah. And I don't know if I mentioned this, Neil, this was all from remote. So this is all in the Midwest. I live in California full time. I was internationally at the time of this going on. Wow. So managing all of this while remote is difficult. And I just felt a little bit stuck in the sense of like, I would call people and try to get them to be held accountable. And the things they would tell me were reasonable and like realistic. And so I'm like, how hard do I push? How much do I threaten? How much do I reward with positive reinforcement?
Right.
So, and again, that's like not me. That's not how I operate. That's not what I do for a living. So bringing someone in, just like in the world of property management, I'm not a property manager. So I go hire that out.
Correct.
For whatever reason, I was like, I could be a product manager. I could wear this hat for the next couple of years. I just didn't think it could get as bad as it did. And so I think a project manager, professional property project manager would help have kept this thing on the rails a little bit better.
Have you been to the vault? Realgritvault.com. Listen, we've got multiple guests who come on, and oftentimes they bring us little tips, tricks, tools, scripts, Excel calculators, a multitude of things, and they share it. They share it for you. You can get them totally free. Totally free. Realgritvault.com. Never been on the show who's brought everything. It's all behind the vault. Get it. Realgritvault.com. Tell me about the insurance side.
So the insurance side, it's tough because the insurance policy was an ACV or an actual cash value policy. And I could not get replacement cost policy from this insurer. And so because the building was built in like 1908, 1904, they're like, nope, that's not an option. So on the insurance side, I think I would have just brought in a public adjuster sooner in the process. I don't know if I would have placed different coverage, because the coverage, once the public adjuster got involved, ended up working out okay. So I think I'm not thrilled with my agent. I'm going to be switching agents as soon as I can.
Yep.
And so because your agent is supposed to be an advocate for you, and this guy was totally unimpressed with. So he's like, oh, I guess that's how the cookie crumbles. I'm like, no, dude, like I'm paying you a ton of money. What do you mean that's how the cookie crumbles? Are you kidding me? So, you know, I take that back. I would have asked him at the beginning of our working together, how much of your business are you writing with this typical insurance carrier? Because what you end up having is captive agents, is what they call it. It's like the insurance company owns, quote unquote, this agency, and they're writing all of the business to them. And so it's kind of this quid pro quo type situation.
It may look like a brokerage in the sense that they shop for everybody, but they write so much business through one place, and the incentives associated with how much they send to one place, ultimately, you know, they live like a captive agent.
Yes. And they don't want to rock the boat with the carrier because, hey, that's who feeds them. That's the hand that feeds, kind of sort of thing. So I think I would have done a little bit more research. And in hindsight, again, coming from the industry, I should have known better.
Give me the high level for the audience's sake, the difference between cash value policy and replacement value policy.
Yeah, great question. So actual cash value says, if you have a loss, the insurance company is going to come in and say, what's the value of the thing that got damaged? Here's the cash value for that. And what often happens, it's just like a car. If you have a 1990 Corolla and you get an accident, the insurance company is going to say, hey, that thing's worth $500. Here's $500.
Right.
Even though it's going to cost you $25,000-$30,000 to go replace the thing. So that's the difference what replacement cost is. Replacement cost is how much does it cost to replace, independent of how old it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's very important that anyone out there listening understands what type of policy they have and the differences. And I think where things get really hairy is when you have a partial loss. Because let's say you've got hail damage to half your roof, like you just experienced.
Yeah.
Well, the other half of the roof isn't damaged. And they're going to look and say, well, this many square foot of roof got damaged. This is how much we think it's worth. Here you go. And you're like, but wait a minute, I can't replace just half the roof. I have to replace the whole thing. Like, bummer, dude. So I think anytime you can look at RC, look at replacement costs, it's definitely a stronger policy. It offers more protection. There are going to be instances where you just can't get it based on age of the building or for whatever circumstances. But again, you want to go into that situation eyes wide open, understanding what it is you have, so you're not thinking that you're protected when in reality you're you're left exposed.
Yeah, no, you're to take that one step further, the replacement cost as an insurance policy costs more money than the actual cash value cost, policy cost. Right. And right. So oftentimes when somebody ends up going and shopping these policies, what policy do you want? And, you know, an insurance agent is communicating to you and the investor, you know, like all of us, like, well, pretty much the cheapest policy possible. Right.
Right. Right.
But we want to make sure we balance that with coverage, because otherwise you're going to get something and you're going to find out long after the fact and then it can't be undone.
Right. And you're going to be kicking yourself. You could have spent an extra $150
not
a
much,
year.
Relatively speaking to what it really covers you for.
Right. Right. So I try to think of insurance as an investment rather than an expense. And if you can make that mental shift, it becomes easy. Like, you're happy to go spend money on investments. We do it every day of the week.
Correct.
And so we're protecting ourselves.
Yeah. Yep. No, you're exactly right. Well, that, and when you end up with a multitude of properties, sooner or later, something's going to happen.
The statistical likelihood of having something happen is fairly high. I always laugh because I worked as a fire protection engineer. The statistical likelihood of having a fire in a building is quite low. The statistical likelihood of having two fires in a building is like almost unheard of. And the fact that it was a week apart, it's like, I thought I was going to get invested for arson, like self-destruction. Like, it was.
You got to think in the insurance world, like that definitely hits an arson category for review.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was not fun.
Talk to me about your team. Is it just you? Do you have anything?
It is just me. Yeah. When I got married, my wife came on board and definitely stepped up and is helping me manage a lot of this stuff. But no, for the most part, it's me. I've got a property manager. I've got local team members. But as far as the ownership and entity structure, it's just me. In 95% of my deals, I brought in some cash partners for a couple of deals. But no, it's mostly me.
For people, you know, their eyes have been wide open. They want to look at a different market. Identifying the property and some value, that's one piece of the equation. And there's other pieces. But the property management becomes a totally different piece. How do you go about sourcing, identifying, interviewing, and, you know, and then ultimately onboarding a property manager in a remote location?
Yeah. So to be honest, like, you can do it a couple of different ways, but there's a lot of legwork involved. And I think everyone needs to go into that very candidly and with that understanding. And so Google, like literally Google best property manager in said market. Check out forums like BiggerPockets or on the Roofstock Academy. We've got forums talking about professionals and vendors. Rock stars know rock stars, as the folks over at BiggerPockets like to say. Mm. And so find out who's successful in that market and go ask them who they're utilizing. Most people are usually happy to share. And if they're not, well, okay, you can go do some more research on your own. But it's literally picking up the phone, having live phone conversations with these people, screening them, interviewing them, and not just like hoping to hear the answers that you want to hear, really talking through things with them, understanding, okay, I'm chatting with you, Neil, you're my property manager. We have a good working relationship now. Are you Neil, the one that's going to be managing my property? Or are you Neil, the inbound salesperson?
Correct.
And somebody totally else is going to be managing the property because I don't know them, but I want to talk to them. You want to get to the decision maker and make sure that you've got a good working relationship with them.
Yep.
And also, I think you want to, this whole interaction that you're having with folks and as the lead into it also is like a bit of a test for me. How soon are they going to call me back if I leave a voicemail? How soon are they going to respond to my email? And I think it's really, really important to have expectation conversations on the front end. I'm a California guy. If I get an email, I hold myself to a 24-hour response time. And I expect the same of anyone else I communicate with. Yep. If somebody else doesn't hold themselves to that same standard, that's not the custom for the market, they might get back to me in 3, 4, 5 days time. And that's their personal standard. They're not being rude. They didn't forget about me. But if I don't understand that, I'm going to get really frustrated really quickly.
Well, you're going to miss 100% of the expectations that you didn't agree to. Right? Somebody else
Super
set for
well
you.
Said.
So you've got to have a conversation to get on the same page.
Yes. And so this is something you have to do with any potential candidate for anyone on your team. And so it is a lot of work, but I will say once it's done, it's done. As long as you're in that market, it's done. Now you go to a new market, you're going to take the processes with you. You still got to have to redo the work, put in the hours, but you know what to expect. You know how to do it. And so it makes it very rinse and repeatable to go into any new market at that stage in the game.
Yeah. Talk to me about what the next year looks like for you. Where are you headed? What's the plan for you and into new markets or new properties?
Yeah. So the last like year and a half, 2 years, I got involved in some short-term rentals out in a new market, which has been super fun. Totally new thing for me. I've got a manager out there, so I'm really just managing the manager, which has been really nice. And then I'm, again, trying to get this major development project over the finish line. Yeah. And then truth be told, I can't stand the bank. Like every time they call, I'm like banging my head against the wall. And now I'm like, why did I go with this? Whatever. So I'm going to work to get some new financing set up, and I'm hoping to go get an agency loan, the really kind of holy promised land.
Yes,
on the multifamily. Great rates, great terms, multifamily stuff, and get that set up.
No, great. Talk to me about the Roofstock Academy and your work there.
Yeah, so the Roofstock Academy, it's really, we designed it to be all of the stuff we as investors who created wished we had known when we got first started investing.
Yeah, cool.
All of the mistakes, all of the crap, all of the stuff that we got surprised or caught off guard by, we put together into an education platform. So we've got on-demand lectures from just starting out to scaling and dispositions and different asset classes. So again, if you have never heard of real estate investing but are interested, we've got something for you. And if you're a more seasoned investor looking to become a little bit more sophisticated or do some different deal type or expand the portfolio, we've got stuff for you as well. We do one-on-one coaching, which we thought was super important because we've been hearing that a lot of people can read books and listen to podcasts and go to seminars and kind of absorb information, but they can't apply it to their personal situation. So we said, let's have a coaching aspect where we can kind of handhold one-on-one and say, here's how you go from theory to execution.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of other cool stuff in the academy. I always encourage people to come check out. Money back guarantee. So if people don't like it, can't stand the sound of your coach's voice, whatever the reason is, like, come check us out. Totally risk free. I'm obviously a little bit biased, but I think it's a great program.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. Where can they find it?
Roofstockacademy.com.
All right, well, that's easy enough. Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call 4-4.
Love
impact.
It.
4-4 impact.
Your favorite quote: I don't ever trust someone without a limp. It's unknown who said it. What about that resonates with you?
I think it's just like you come across people so often that are talking the talk, but don't know how to walk the walk or can't walk the walk. And I always am super vigilant about, if you're going to go take advice from someone, understand if they have a motivation behind it and if they've done the thing that they're talking about. Because anyone can stand up on a stage or behind a microphone and say, oh, real estate investing is the best thing ever, it's so easy, you know, guru, whatever. And until they've done it and until they've failed at it, I would argue they're not in a position to be talking about it.
Never trust a skinny chef, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their next level?
I think it's this fear of failure. And I know that's what it was for me for a long time. And I was too green and too naive, and I'll go so far as to say it's too stupid to know that I could fail. And so that's why I just like kept falling forward on my face. I'm like, well, this is progress. Yeah. And so I think that people get really stuck in their comfort zone. And okay, now I just got really good at this. I don't want to go do that thing because that thing is scary. I could lose at that thing. And I think that's where growth happens, is right kind of on the edges of that, is let's push ourselves, but not so far to go do a 15 unit development project that goes blows up in your face sort of thing.
Yeah, no, if that did not go the way it did, if it was smooth, if it, you know, you'd probably be saying something else. I'd be thinking, oh, this is right. So it's unique and unusual. It's a fine line to go, where is that? And to not get delusional, drunk on success, to understand, you know, some people will find success and then they think it's them and it's not really them, right? There's a lot of people who've been successful the last handful of years and we've been rewarded by the market. You didn't do anything except own.
Right. You spray and pray.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's not an us. That's
you individually. Skill.
That's all of us.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. It is all the other things that have to go along with what that particular deal, the asset, the process, the business building processes.
Right. Yeah, no. I totally agree.
Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
I love surfing and kite surfing. Those are kind of my two main passions. I'm a California guy. So if you're watching this on video, you're probably like, yeah, you fit the bill. It's awesome. Like I can't get enough of either sport.
Dude, how hard is kite surfing? It looks impossible for a fat Iowan.
I thought the same thing. And I was like remarkably surprised at how easy it is from like a physical perspective. You don't need to be in super great shape.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to, there's like, it's not like anything you've ever done before. And so I'd like flown
that, I believe, kid,
whatever. Yeah. So like the whole kite aspect is totally brand new. It's totally foreign. Yeah. If you've ever snowboarded or wakeboarded, the board skills are very translatable, okay. Yeah. But now there's just a lot more going on. There's, where is my kite? What's the tide doing? What's the wind doing? Yeah. What is everyone else around me doing? Oh, and by the way, there might be boats moving in the area too. So just take stock of the stuff, but like it's a cross between like surfing, snowboarding, and flying. So if any of that appeals to you, I highly recommend it.
It seems like a sport that gets you very mentally engaged.
Very much so. You cannot be focused on anything yeah. else other yeah. than in that moment. And I think that's really why I like surfing. I always joke that I go yeah. in the water with problems and come out with solutions.
Yeah.
So you're very, very much in the moment because you have to be. And so it's a good physical, mental, spiritual, emotional things to be doing.
That's cool. What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
I think honestly, just creating like safe, affordable, reasonable, reliable housing for so many people. Because if anyone's been paying attention to the news as of late,
yep.
we just don't have enough housing to go around. And there are so many landlords out there that are slumlords and that give those of us who are trying to make an impact yep. to do this the right way a really bad name. And so when you can separate yourself from the pack and people know you as the person that is happy to house and provide shelter for people, safe, habitable places to live, that really gives me a warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to connect up here and be on. That's, you've got a very fun backstory and a tremendous personal experience going through one particular asset. And you've had obviously a lot of success over the years. And so I can't wait. I'm with you. I want to connect in a year because I want to hear how it came full circle on that particular one. And then, you know, on the backside of that, where your mind is and how do you move forward with additional projects in the future and how that kind of shaped the course for where you're headed.
Totally. Would love to, Neil. And thank you again for having me. This was a lot of fun.
It's my pleasure. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Neil Timmons. I've got a question for you. Are you a fix and flipper and want to leverage your skills, build passive income, create bigger paydays? Maybe you buy and hold rental houses and you want to increase your income by working less. Maybe you're executing on the Burr methodology and times being what they are, you're finding more cash locked into a deal. Maybe you want more predictable profits, or maybe this is your first go at real estate. Well, I've got a challenge for you. The 20X Profit Challenge. It's hosted and taught by yours truly. I'm going to teach and show you over the course of 5 days in this totally free challenge, how to 20X your profit. Lesson one's a game changer, multiplying your income and capital fast. Lesson two is the perfect plan. I'm going to show you how to be getting off market 20X profit deals coming to you. The cash flow multipliers, lesson three, how to rapidly force appreciation and income growth. Lesson four is the deal accelerator, buying and holding profit guarantee properties. And lesson five, the wealth accumulator, consistently closing a 20X profit deals. I'm going to show you exactly my methodology, exactly what I did to go from where I was at, not achieving the results I wanted to achieve in my life, not achieving the passive income that I hoped for, that I knew I was capable of, and in 3.5 years, becoming financially free. I'm going to do that in a 5-day free challenge. To sign up, go to 20xprofitchallenge.com, 20xprofitchallenge.com. We've got one coming up. Go there now, register. It's totally free. 20xprofitchallenge.com, and I'll see you in the challenge.